Hey guys, this week's episode is brought to you by Grove Collaborative. Over 500,000 families use Grove for stuff like non-toxic dish soap, plant-based skincare, and tree-free bath tissue. And you can get 3 Mrs. Meyers cleaners, a 60-day VIP membership, and a bonus gift all for free when you sign up at grove.co/YHL. That's grove.co/YHL.
I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today we're sharing why you may have to unlearn some of your favorite decorating tricks when it comes to staging your house to sell. Plus, we take a look at the most fight-inducing home projects, and we reveal how you guys really feel about textured walls. So I recently had another staging project. You guys know I do these. That's like my side hustle. I love house staging. But the sort of new thing that happened with this one is I hired a lovely assistant and his name is John.
And he was quite lovely. He was also quite sweaty.
It's hard work.
It is hard work. I mean, I think I've helped you on like a project like way back when you first started like helping a neighbor and a local realtor. But I haven't really been involved in any of the recent staging projects that you've been hired to do. So I've kind of forgotten what goes into it. So it was fascinating to be plunged back into that world with you a little bit to see what goes into it.
I'm all business, guys. I'm like, I need you here. I need this there. And we had the realtor there too. So it was me, the realtor, and John hustling and bustling. The reason I brought him in on this project is it's the biggest house I've ever staged. And it was a very full house. We'll say that. It had a lot of things and the homeowners knew themselves well enough to know they wanted to hire a stager and get that help. And we were excited to do it because we knew it would be one of those really big makeovers because when there are lots of things and you're staging it, you edit out a lot and it gets kind of amazing, like rooms that felt packed and overwhelming, even to the person who owns all those things and sees them go, they like it better the other way too.
Yeah, I want to tell people sort of my observations coming into this fresh, but I think first you should probably reestablish for those who haven't heard you mention before, sort of like what your version of staging is, because it's not like what you might think where it's like you bring in a truckload of furniture.
Right. So a lot of home staging companies, they literally have like a storage facility of furniture. They put it in a big truck and they furnish empty houses when people have moved out and they have no furniture, or they completely like get rid of the other person's furniture and put their furniture in. It's like a total home makeover with large pieces.
Yeah, I think a lot of times it's about taking an empty house, whether it's a new construction or whether it's a place someone has moved out of, and making it look lived in. I feel like your version is almost like taking a very lived in space and making it look a little less lived in.
Right. I know, it's funny. So what I do, I always call it like top line staging or like accessory staging. So I'm much cheaper than the big truck and all the big furniture. And I just spend about 8 hours from top to bottom on each staging project. That goes into like prepping and shopping. I do a house visit where I look around and take my photos. I might recommend paint colors to the homeowner, give them maybe some homework. Like I'll put post-it notes on big pieces of furniture and say, these can go. You can get a pod. You can put them in the attic. You can put them in the garage. You can move them to your new house if you have access, but I will eliminate certain things with the post-it notes so that when I return with all of my stuff for the actual staging day, which is my second house visit.
That's when I came.
Right. That's when John came. That's when I super accessorize, make it look gorgeous. Usually that day or the day after is when the photography for the real estate listing happens and then it hits the market. And I mentioned I'm much cheaper than the big staging companies. A lot of people have asked me, how do you charge? Like, do people rent things from you? Do they buy these accessories from you? I have just a very simple flat fee. It's $500. I'll reveal myself.
Ooh.
So it's like 8 hours of work. I charge $500. In this case, I brought John in. The realtor was helping too. But I just love this process. It's really fun for me. And what is included in that $500 is my items go into the house. And then when the house goes under contract, I go back and I pick up all my items and they come out of the house. So nobody is buying my stuff from me. If they're interested in it, I usually tell them where I got it. Like, oh, you like that duvet? It's from IKEA. I'll send you a link. But my stuff is my stuff. I have a big storage closet in our guest room at home. That's where I keep it when it's not in a house. And I stage one house at a time typically because I don't want to double my stash. So if somebody wants me to stage, but it's in another house, I pass on it. But I have had very good luck with staging. The longest it has taken for a house to go under contract that I have staged is 4 days. So things don't stay in these houses for very long at all. So I have made it very streamlined. I would give you a tip if you're looking to get into this, because people have asked me. You have to, when you're charging a flat fee, define what you're doing and not go beyond that, because you can quickly lose all of your profit if you're making five visits to the house.
Right, right. I think your approach is much more about like, I'm going to give you this amount of time to make it the best it can be in that amount of time. I'm not going to paint walls or bring in furniture. Like, you're not going over the top. You're just helping like fluff it a little bit before the pictures.
Right. I'm giving them the tools. And in that pre-meeting, if they want paint colors, if they want to know what should go, or we want to discuss like, hey, I'm going to buy a shower curtain. What should I get? I give them all that advice going into it. And then I fill in the rest of the gaps on that final staging day right before the photos.
Yeah. And I'll say for me, again, being there for the first time in a while, the three things that struck me about the process was one, just how stressful moving is. Like, we haven't moved in about 6 years. I mean, apart from moving furniture into the beach houses, but we haven't had to pack up a whole household of our things and move it somewhere else recently.
Right. It's a lot of stuff, guys. It's your pantry. It's under your sink. It's your garage. It's everything.
Well, and it just happens on top of the rest of life. Like, you still have to work. You still have to get the kids to school. Like, it is a big task. So I had a lot of compassion for this family and any family really who's going through moving, but it also reinforced me why it may be helpful to have someone like you or some staging person come in and take some of the workload off, because there's a lot of other things going on.
Yeah, I think it just helps people too, because you guys know statistically staging really does help sell houses. Like, that $500 that whether the realtor pays it, sometimes the realtor pays me, or the homeowner pays it, sometimes the homeowner hires me. That money is so well spent, because if these houses are going under contract in a day, 2 days, 3 days with multiple offers, higher bids, it's just because you're making the house look good,
baby. I think
baby.
You should raise your rates.
Maybe I should. I just love it so much. And you guys seem to love hearing about it. I've already written a post about it on the blog. I'm getting demands for much more. People want to see what I do with a closet, for example, like how to stage a closet. They have so many questions. I'm going to cover a lot of the visual stuff in a post, because a podcast is not visual. But I will put a link to the original post in our show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. It really demonstrates a lot of the top line stuff I go in and do. And they're all super affordable tips.
Well, that was my other observation, was that so much of what we did that day was just editing and decluttering. Like, the sort of things we talk about in our efforts to minimize our house, like clearing off counters, keeping your surfaces open and clear. Because those are the things when a prospective buyer is going to come in, they don't want to see all your stuff. They want to take in like the beautiful counters that you have, or like the clean, empty floors. That's why having a lot of furniture, a lot of big rugs is helpful when you're designing a room to look pretty. But when you're designing a room to sell, you want like the hardwood floors to shine, not your decor.
Exactly. So I do keep some rugs for sure, but I definitely don't keep those walls lined with furniture all the way around, just packed, packed, packed. I make lots of breathing spaces for the eye. And I think there's a huge distinction between decorating a home and how I would approach decorating a room and photographing it for like a magazine type spread, and how I approach staging a room to sell a house.
Yeah, that was my other observation, was that I kept fighting this instinct to try to make it look super well decorated. Like, there was a space in the entry where there was a big empty wall where I was like, oh, we could put a great piece of art, or there was even room for like a 5x7 rug. And I kept having to say to myself, like, no, that's not the goal here.
Right. An example I would give is like, if I was making a room look pretty for photography, like it's going to be in a magazine. And if you look at like Pottery Barn, they'll demonstrate this too. Oftentimes you'll see like shoes kicked off by the sofa, or like a magazine open on a coffee table or on a couch. It almost looks as if a person has just exited the room.
Right.
And you get to see this lived in space. Well, the reason that's not a great approach to staging is you don't want people to feel like they walked into your house in the middle of you living in it. And you don't want it to feel like infringing on someone's very personal space. So that's why I think a lot of people take this one line about staging, depersonalizing, and they only believe it means taking down family photos, which I don't even do, because I think our eyes can see a family photo and they can imagine their own family photo in the place of that photo. But what I do is, if someone has like 15 supplies on their bathroom counter because that's their personal space and they use this razor and this cream whatever, I put all of that in a basket under the sink. They still can bring the basket out and use it every morning while they're showing their house. But we all know that living in our house as we're showing it is different than living in it every day with all of our stuff everywhere, right? It's kind of inconvenient.
True.
So it's just practical things to make it appear as if everything has a place. Things aren't shoved anywhere. Overstuffed is bad. Too much furniture is bad. I generally think houses I stage would look under-decorated in a home magazine. They would look like they need a throw. Let's layer in more art. Let's layer in more accessories. Another example would be on a nightstand in a bedroom. You might have in a magazine a beautiful lamp, maybe a cute little ceramic plate, and on it you'd see like necklaces and earrings that just were splayed out. A glass of water, perhaps.
A pair of glasses, like reading glasses.
Exactly. Those are all super personal things that make it feel like you're walking into someone else's bedroom. In a magazine, it's wonderful because you have that layered, voyeuristic, lifestyle-ish image you're portraying. But in staging, I literally on a nightstand will leave like a decorative box closed so people can't see what's in it and a beautiful lamp, and that is it.
Well, yeah, on that same note, I felt like a lot of things you bring in are kind of generic in a way. Like, I don't totally mean that as a bad word, but it did feel like for a magazine purpose, it might feel unspecial or basic.
Totally agree. If you guys see what's in the back of my car when I'm staging, and maybe I should take a picture of that the next time the car is packed, you would say, these are a bunch of unremarkable, basic items. How are they going to sell a house faster? But I will tell you, people can envision their style on top of these basic items, and they're not too descriptive or specific to scare someone off. So like the car will be full of white duvet covers. I always switch the bedding to white. White towels for the bathrooms. I always switch those to white. I've even started bringing in white soap pumps because people have these really busy soap pumps on a counter in a kitchen that might be flecked and busy too. And they're literally competing with each other. And I'm trying to sell the counter. I'm not trying to sell the soap pump. I love little white pitchers or glass vases for clippings from the yard. It's a free way to decorate. I'll put those on like the counter in the bathroom by the sink. I'll do some wooden decorative boxes. I'll do baskets that are woven. Essentially, the colors in my car are wood or woven, you know, like the natural tones, a lot of white, and then green in that. That's for the plants.
Greenery.
Exactly. That's the freshness. So I'm not bringing in a lot of patterns and a lot of colors and a lot of very specific things because they might turn one person on but turn another person off. I do have some colorful pops of like pillows, fringed hand towels, even art. But other than that, I'm not bringing in colorful curtains, bedding, all that because it's too much.
So again, in the show notes, we'll put a link to the old post Sherry has done about staging. And then coming soon at some point, we'll have an updated post about this specific project that we just did together.
Yes, there's lots of good pictures, guys. And for everyone I asked on Insta stories what questions you wanted me to tackle, I think I'm going to do it like a Q&A and tackle way more questions with visuals to help you understand what I'm talking about.
But next up, I have a game for Sherry. So if you've listened to our podcast for a while, you know that Sherry and I never fight or disagree about anything we do in our house.
And every project goes smoothly.
No, obviously we're lying because just about every other episode is like, here's something we disagree on or here's something that went wrong.
Or here's when I was right and John was wrong.
No, we don't have episodes like that, I think, ever. Anyways, what I'm getting to is our game today comes from a survey that Porch.com did about DIY flops and how much it causes people to fight.
Oh, like bad projects?
Yes. So let me set this up a little bit because the whole survey is just generally about DIY and the errors and the fights are just a portion of it. But I think I should point out that Porch.com, I think they're one of those sites that helps you like find contractors or professionals.
Uh-huh.
We should all keep in mind that their goal as a website is to get people to not DIY.
Right. They want to fluster you.
Yes.
They're planting fear in your heart.
Exactly. So that is kind of what the results showed. I just want everyone to like have that in the back of their mind so they can take all these numbers with a grain of salt.
Okay.
Okay. But what they found after surveying 1,000 people about their DIY projects is that
they look for the most nervous people. They were like, who are people who are already scared of DIY? Let's poll them.
Who are the most unhappy couples? Let's start there. No, they found that 28% of DIYers reported fighting with their significant other over a DIY project.
Wait, what percent?
28%.
Oh, I thought it'd be 100.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think about 72% of those people are liars. But they said when a mistake is made on a project, so when a project doesn't go smoothly, that number went up to 46%.
Oh,
so,
yeah, for sure. It turns the pressure up. We're always arguing when things are not going well.
But I don't know what everyone's definition of a spat or an argument or a fight is because, you know, we're not like coming to fisticuffs.
I do remember a day ago you saying very passive aggressively to me, if we had put the shelves up before the tile, as I suggested.
I did say that.
To which I said, I know that's how you feel, John Petersick.
and I just wanted to make that feeling known again.
But is that a spat?
No, it's not a spat.
I feel like that's a spat, but these people are not admitting they have those.
I think it's turned into a spat on the podcast. Anyways, so they said, according to a couple's therapist, the stressors inherent in renovations are a common cause of strife between partners.
Obviously.
Obviously, yes. Then it gets a little bit dark. It says, and while most couples get over the temporary drama, some do decide to part ways after home improvement conflict exposes underlying issues.
What?
I told you Porch.com has an agenda with this.
Really? That's a bit fear-mongering.
Yes, but let me get to the game. So they actually polled people on which type of projects produced the most couples' fights.
Okay.
And so,
is a trip to IKEA on there?
It actually wasn't.
Should be.
I think I saw a meme lately that said there are three walking speeds at IKEA. There is, I don't know what I'm looking for, I know exactly what I'm looking for, and divorce. Well, so what I'm going to do is kind of a head-to-head here. I'm going to give you two different projects, and you have to tell me which of them caused more fighting.
Okay.
First up, interior painting versus exterior painting.
Oh, exterior painting is much more stressful.
You are correct.
Yes.
32% said exterior, whereas only 22% said interior.
You know why, you guys? Because interior is like a $20 gallon of paint that you can redo, and it's a smaller space, and exterior is very expensive and a much bigger space, and it's a costly mistake if you get it wrong.
Yeah, I think the stakes are higher on an exterior.
Exactly.
Next, installing a ceiling fan versus installing an appliance.
Ooh, it really depends. A fridge just rolls in and plugs in, but a dishwasher is a whole shebang.
They did not specify, unfortunately.
I will say installing a ceiling fan.
You are correct again.
They're annoying to balance.
Yeah.
You know, they're heavy, your arms are tired, you can get it so that it makes an annoying sound or it's rickety. There are like little things you have to fix every time.
Yeah, I personally didn't find it that bad, but I know a lot of people, it's a sore spot putting a ceiling fan in. 38% of people fought over a ceiling fan installation, whereas only 17%, actually the lowest of the survey, was installing an appliance.
You know why?
Because the person who delivers the appliance usually installs it.
Exactly.
Yes.
It's included free with purchase right. From Home Depot, like, Lowe's, or everyone else.
That wasn't stressful at all, but should we fight just in case? Next, hanging drywall versus installing flooring.
I mean, we hate nothing more than drywall. But hanging it is not the hard part. It's the mudding and the sanding. So I will say installing a floor.
You are incorrect.
Dang! Is it those snap-on easy floors?
Again, they didn't provide specifics, but hanging drywall said 41% of people, but installing flooring was only 30%, which was interesting because also in their survey, they pointed out that installing flooring, when there was a mistake, it actually added the most time and the most cost of any other project. So they did a whole other graph, and I'll put this all in the show notes if you want to see it, about like when you make a mistake, how much does it affect the extra time or extra cost, and flooring was the most severe.
Hmm.
Okay, last one, plumbing work versus electrical work.
Ah, it's such a toss-up because plumbing is basically like connecting tubes. Like when you really think about it, it's not that stressful. And electrical can be scary. I mean, you turn off the water and you turn off the power. I'll say plumbing's more annoying than electrical.
Wrong again.
Dang, really?
It actually was about half as much. Plumbing was only 20%, but electrical wiring or rewiring was 43%, the highest of any of them.
Really? Do you think they're talking about like changing a light versus changing a faucet, or are we talking about like in-wall systems?
I don't know. You keep asking me for specifics. They didn't give me much more than that, but I guess maybe because electrical has such high stakes, not that there aren't high stakes for plumbing because you could, I guess, flood something, but like electrical, you could kill yourself.
Yeah, or burn the house down.
Yeah.
But you know, always turn off the power to the whole house, you guys. If one person listening learns that from me, don't turn off the power to one room that you're working
on. No, I don't say that. I think if you are certain you're on the right breaker, you can just turn that off. But if you are uncertain, just do the whole house to be safe.
Right. We have just learned that we'll turn off the kitchen, but the stove for some reason is on its own breaker and you're not actually turning off the stove. And that is dangerous, guys.
Just buy one of those little electrical tester things. I'll put a link in the show notes and it can let you know whether your wires are live or not. So you can be certain before you make like skin contact with them.
Right.
They did say, actually, I did find this. They said, perhaps the prospect of getting shocked increases the tension in these instances. One partner might wish to plunge ahead while the other urges them to stop in the name of safety.
I thought you were going to say one partner wishes to plunge ahead and the other partner hopes they get just zapped a little just to like show them who's boss.
That would be very mean. Anyways, in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast, I will put a link to this survey so you can see all the results if you'd like. And again, take them with a grain of salt, please.
But safety, guys, for real, be safe.
And don't fight like we don't.
Right. Just like be so in love that even when your husband says, if we had put the shelves up before the tile, this never would have happened.
This is a gross mischaracterization. That sound means we have an update, and this one comes from episode 135, where we were talking about textured walls. Remember that?
Mm.
So we put a poll in the show notes about textured walls, and I wanted to share some of the results to see whether people loved or hated them, and if they were a regional thing, because in our initial responses, it seemed to be heavily weighted towards the western side of the United States.
Having the texture.
Having a textured wall. So over 6,500 people replied.
That's a good sample.
Yeah. And nearly two-thirds of them, so 63%, had textured ceilings, but less than half, only 47%, had textured walls.
So ceilings that have texture are more prevalent.
Yes, than walls. And it was confirmed that it is a somewhat regional thing because nearly 50% of the textured wall people lived in the west or southwestern United States, and another 25% lived in the Midwest. So like less than a quarter of the people with textured walls lived here on the eastern side of the country like us.
Interesting.
So that's why we don't see them as much. I will say textured ceilings was a bit more spread out geographically. I didn't see much of a trend there that they only happened on the west. So I think it is really the textured walls that you see more and more as you move west across the United States.
Westward.
Yes.
Fievel goes west.
Towards Westworld.
Oh, you just skipped over Fievel?
I did. Sue me. I also asked in the poll whether people love them or loathe them. So on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being I loathe them and 5 being I love them, where do you think we ended up, Sherry?
I think more people loathe them than love them.
Oh yeah, lots more people loathe them. The average rating for both ceilings and walls was a 2.
Oh, so 2% of people love them.
No.
Oh.
There's a reason why I'm the data person on this podcast.
I didn't understand that.
No, if 1 is I absolutely loathe them,
oh,
the average answer was just a 2.
Got yes. It. I thought you were going to say a percentage who loathe them or a percentage who love them.
Well, 44% of people, here's your percentage, voted a 1 for textured ceilings. So people really hate textured ceilings.
Huh.
But only 37 voted a 1 for textured walls. So walls are hated a little bit less.
Huh.
I will say that 4.5% of people voted a 5 that they love them.
Wow. So 4.5%, not 2%, as I wrongly stated before. Right. But I was close.
Right. They also, I'll real quick say, they identified a few other drawbacks to textured walls that I didn't necessarily think about when we were talking about before. One is dusting.
Oh.
You have to dust your walls if the, you know, texture is that severe.
Hmm. What about scraping yourself on them?
That came up as well.
Because I'm klutzy and I could picture like cat scratches on my face.
Yes.
And I just grazed the wall.
Someone said growing up, we had a sandy texture on the walls. At around age 13, I went through a phase where I'd sleep with my arms stretched out above my head. I'd wake up in the morning with bloody hands because my hands would rub against the sandy texture all night. I never told my parents because I was afraid they'd think I was possessed. Yeah, and people also said they would get essentially road rash bumping up against their textured walls.
Dang.
Yeah, so there was the dust, there was the injury. People also said that painting it can be challenging because you might need extra coats to really get in all the crevices.
And like a super nappy roller.
Right, exactly. And I think you mentioned in the last episode about patching it can be difficult. We did hear from some people that they actually sell like orange peel patch.
Yeah, they said you kind of spray it and get the texture. Some people said that's really easy because they sell something for it. Someone said, I have bought those kits. It's impossible and a nightmare for me. So I think it probably has to do with how handy you are, if you can replicate your texture, or how complicated your texture is.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll mention is we did get one response that said, I am shook. I have never heard of not texturing walls. They said they're in a brand new home and they put a lot of time and attention into selecting the texture. And now she's worried that her family who lives on the East Coast thinks they're really weird for it.
No, I totally think wherever you live, there are norms and you don't even realize that there are other ways to live. Hence these segments, which are so interesting.
Yeah.
Because I love learning the ways other people live.
Well, and to bring it full circle, the house that we staged together actually had textured walls and textured ceilings.
Exactly. And I thought those don't exist in Richmond, and there they are. So there's always an outlier and it's totally fine.
Well, and next up we're digging.
I'm digging something for my face.
Another face thing, everyone. So hold on to your horses.
Hold on to your hats.
Hold on to your faces.
Hold on to your butts. But it has nothing to do with butts. Except people like a smooth butt and they like a smooth face. This is going perfectly.
Wow, you tied that together so beautifully.
Master of segues.
Yes, but first we have to take a quick break.
I know a lot of you out there have probably been bitten by the spring cleaning bug, and if you feel like you want to make your cleaning routine healthier for you and the planet this year, check out this week's sponsor, Grove Collaborative.
Yeah, so Grove carries tons of our favorite green and non-toxic brands like Method, Seventh Generation, Burt's Bees, and you can have it all sent right to your door when you need it, or you can even set up recurring regular shipments so you never run out.
And if you're new to Grove, they'll send you a whole lot of free stuff when you sign up at grove.co/YHL and spend your first $20. Just make sure you go to grove.co/YHL, not .com.
Yeah, and this month they're giving you a free 60-day VIP membership, a free 3-piece Mrs. Meyers cleaning set, and one of their special spring scents, which are lilac, peony, and mint. I'm trying to memorize them. And they're even tossing in a free surprise bonus gift.
Yeah, even as existing members, we get free bonus surprises thrown in sometimes, which I love.
Yeah, a lot of times it's a set of their walnut scrubber sponges, which I know doesn't sound that exciting, but I always appreciate the reminder to swap out my nasty old kitchen sponge, and so it's actually pretty nice when one just like shows up at your door.
Yes, we have a backstock now.
So again, you can sign up at grove.co/YHL to get all those freebies with your first order. Again, it's grove.co, not .com/YHL. I know you are all clamoring to hear what face thing Sherry is digging this week, but first I want to jump in because, guys, I've seen the light. So many moons ago on this very podcast, I dug a nightlight that we had installed in our hall bathroom upstairs so that when the kids had to use the restroom in the middle of the night, they had a little bit of light, like not too much. And the thing I liked about this light was the nightlight was installed into the outlet. So like when it got dark in the room, it automatically clicked on, but it didn't block either of the outlets. And at the time of digging that, I still dig that, but that's not what I'm talking about this week. At the time of digging that, a lot of people said, no, you should get those special little nightlights that are actually built into the outlet cover because you don't have to like rewire anything or install a new plug. It just literally snaps in place of your existing plastic cover.
And looks the same. It's just a plastic cover, looks very nondescript. And then in the evening, it illuminates kind of like the aisles of a plane, you know, the like downlighting.
Oh, yeah, like a movie theater.
Yes.
So that is what I'm digging this week because I finally had another reason to purchase a nightlight like that, something that was built into an outlet, and I decided to try these instead. And guys, you were right all along.
You were right. They're the best. We were at the beach house, and I kept saying, we have a plug-in nightlight in the hallway, and it's too bright. Like, it shined under doors. That's how intense it was. And I like rooms to be real dark when I'm sleeping, but I also need a nightlight in the hall just for, like, the kids to find their way to the bathroom, or, like, if a guest is staying with us and wants to find their way through the hallway in the dark. Just feels safe to have a light out there, but it was too intense. So I put on our little shopping list, not too bright nightlight. And then I was like, hit it, John.
Yes. So I ordered these off of Amazon. I will put the link in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. They are only $15. They function the same way as the one I had to like wire in there, where when the room gets dark, it automatically turns on. And it's just like three small little LEDs that shine down from the very bottom edge of the outlet cover. So it just goes to the floor. It's not too bright. And you don't really even notice it's there in the daytime. Like, it's not some giant light or sensor on the main part of the switchplate. I mean, not like I'm super sensitive to how my switchplate covers look.
Right, but they look normal. Like, it's almost a surprise in the evening. Like, ooh, these illuminate? How are they doing that? Where's the glow coming from? Because it's almost like under cabinet lighting. It is literally tiny light shining down from the bottom lip.
And they are so easy to install because you literally unscrew the existing outlet cover. So it's like one or two tiny screws, depending on how your outlet is set up. And then you just put the new one on and screw it back in place. You don't even have to turn off the power.
It's why they're called snap-on, because it is that easy. You like take off the old one, put the new one on with one or two screws, and you're done.
Yeah, no wiring, no electrical knowledge needed or anything. So we liked it so much in the hallway at the beach house. We bought a couple for the hallway at the duplex. And if you're gonna ask me, oh, I have those square outlets, do they sell it that? Or I have like the two single round outlets, they sell it both ways. I learned the term for those. If you have like the two round outlets that are separate, that's called a duplex outlet.
No way. Mm-hmm. Very fitting.
And then if you have the square one that's just like a single long rectangle.
Right. Hole, it's two outlets, but they form one long vertical rectangle.
Right. That's called a decor outlet.
A decor outlet.
Yes.
Fun fact, the duplex has both of those.
Right. So make sure you know what you're ordering before you order it. They also sell it in white and almond, I believe.
Okay, but back to my face. I have been digging something that I wanted to try for a while before I said I was digging it, because I'm not one of those go with the masses type of people. Like, if everyone tells me something is amazing, I will certainly give it a try. I will try anything at least once, but I will not just rave about it because the world is raving. But I did buy this because the world was raving about it. A few people who know I do really natural stuff with my face, and I'm into the like vinegar and coconut oil and not the like stripping cleansers and chemicals.
We like to call it the woo-woo.
Right. It's my face woo-woo. They said, you have got to try this stuff called Thayer's. And the selling feature about it was, everyone's like, it has actual rose petal extract, witch hazel, and aloe vera.
Witch hazel?
Witch hazel is a natural, it's like frankincense. It grows. It's like an herb.
Can it fly through a crooked window?
I don't believe it can.
Okay.
Call back, guys. Last episode. Check it out. But anyway, so people kept telling me, you have got to try this. It just goes along with everything you do. And I was like, but I probably won't like it.
I'm not even understanding what it is. It's a cream.
It's a toner. So it's like clear.
What is a toner?
You put it on a cotton ball and you rub it all over your face.
Okay.
Okay. So just like I use my apple cider vinegar, it's that. So I was like, well, I'll give it a try. I go to Amazon to buy it, guys. It has 4,688 five-star reviews.
May I add that my Snap Power outlet has 4,100 reviews.
Oh, are they five stars?
Well, it's like 4.5 is the average.
Right. This is like 4.75, but it's like an overwhelming testimonial of thousands of people ordering this and loving it. So I gave it a try, and dudes, I love it. So now I'm finally ready to say, I agree with the masses. I dig it. It is a beautiful smell. It almost smells fake to me at first. Like, I was like, they're adding perfume to this or something. But it is rose petal extract, and it smells like roses. It's clear. You put it on a cotton ball. You rub it all over your face. And the thing that got me when I was reading the reviews is that so many people say it works for adult acne, and we all know I struggle with that. So I went for it. I have not been sorry. In fact, one day I forgot to bring it with me on an overnight. Got a zit that day.
Wow.
Went back home, used it, zit went away.
Your zits were really waiting for an opening.
It is literally like kryptonite for zits.
Is that what a toner does?
No, I think a toner just like, it helps even your skin tone. Like, oh, if you have a bright red, you know, or like uneven skin tone.
That's what you mean by toner. I
guess.
I'm unfamiliar.
It just smells beautiful. It's like, feels like a nice ritual. It's refreshing. I do it every morning now. And I just layer it in with my other stuff that I use, because I feel like maybe the apple cider vinegar is clearing my pores, and maybe the rose water extract with aloe vera, which is also really good for healing, and witch hazel, which is really good for redness. I feel like that's helping my zits, whether it's just taking the redness out of them and also keeping them from popping up somewhere else.
I feel like everything you're adding to your routine is just getting you one step closer to just rolling the lemon on your face like I did to troll you.
Go to the show notes, guys. I'll put that video in. It was the best. John likes to make fun of my face, but you know what? You married this face. Take that. Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast.
And as always, thanks for telling us what you do while you listen, like Kirsten from the Netherlands, who listened while on a flight from Amsterdam to Berlin while her phone was in our favorite mode, airplane mode.
I like how you conveniently left out the name of her town in the Netherlands.
I just didn't trust myself to pronounce it correctly. I think it's Alblasserdam or Alblasserdam.
I'm sure neither of those are correct, and we will hear about it.
Sorry, Kirsten. Or is it Kirsten?
And don't forget to check out younghouselove.com/podcast for all the bonus links, photos, and info from this episode.
Yep, like all the data from that porch.com survey and our survey about textured walls, as well as a photo of that nightlight thing that I'm digging.
And I'm going to throw in a sneak peek at my staging project for you guys. So head to the show notes. It turned out so good, if I do say so myself. Thank you, lovely assistant.
Later.
Bye. Boom shakalaka. Is that what people say when they put stuff on their face?
Nope.
Nope.
I'm not an expert in this area, but nope.